This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 741 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. On October 10th, the U.S.-brokered third ceasefire came into effect following 2 years and 3 days of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Journalist Ayman Al-Hissi documented thousands of Palestinians once again returning to their homes in Gaza City and the north, many of whom were forcibly displaced by Israel over the last few weeks. Mahmoud Bassal, spokesperson for the civil defense, was greeted by reporter Saeed Hezbollah and passers-by in the early hours of the announcement of a truce on October 9th, as Palestinians expected the bombing to stop. Bassal said, smiling broadly, quote, "This is the moment we've been waiting for 2 years, 2 years of our people being exterminated, 2 years of our people being murdered. Today, Gaza is liberated from this occupation. Today, a ceasefire is declared. Congratulations to our people. Congratulations to every child in Gaza." An older man tells Saeed, quote, "We congratulate you on your steadfastness and the steadfastness of the Palestinian people on this beloved land." Another man adds, quote, "Gaza has proven throughout the ages that it is resistant to aggression. Gaza is the symbol of legendary patience. We stayed in Gaza. We will not leave Gaza and will not allow any occupier or colonizer to kill this country." However, later that night on October 9th, just hours after people celebrated and tried to return home, Israeli forces bombed a building in the center of Gaza City, killing at least six and wounding many others, with more trapped under the rubble. Saad Hezbollah again reported from the scene, showing civil defense crews trying to reach the dead and wounded. The spokesperson for the Gaza municipality, our contributor Asim Al-Nabi, spoke to Middle East Eye on October 9th as the Israeli army was still attacking areas across Gaza.
Tell us how news of the ceasefire has been received in Gaza today.
To be honest, there is no ceasefire yet in the city. In the past 20 minutes, there were more than five explosions. I counted myself. Why? I'm sure there is other explosions in another neighborhoods. We can't say that there is a calmness in the city, while many people around the world circulating the news about ceasefire. The people in Gaza are still suffering from different and difficult circumstances in terms of bombardment, in terms of food insecurity, in terms of water scarcity, in terms of massive destruction in the infrastructure and civic facilities. Today, after 2 years of genocidal war in Gaza, there is a water scarcity. Can you imagine that there is more than 75% of the total water wells in Gaza have been destroyed, and people now are getting less than 25% of the total daily needs of water.
On October 10th, as the ceasefire was finally implemented, Palestinians continued to return to the north. Journalist Abdel Kader Sabah filmed footage for Drop Site News, saying, quote, "People are returning to Gaza City any way they can, on foot, by motorized rickshaw, by truck, but the level of destruction is difficult to explain. Sheikh Radwan is destroyed, so is Tal al-Hawa, Nafaq Street. Many neighborhoods are ruined, but some features of life are returning. Journalist Bisan Auda documented the wreckage Israel left behind in the ruins of the Zaytun neighborhood of Gaza City on October 11th.
This is Bisan from Gaza. Today I'm documenting a new neighborhood that was destroyed in the past 2 to 3 weeks. And it's around the Zaytun neighborhood in Gaza City. And this is the explosive vehicle, or what the Palestinians call robot, explosive robot. It's a booby-trapped also. This is a vehicle that the Israelis used to put about 10 to 15 times a day during the past 2 months. These used to be vehicles for to carry the soldiers, by the way, as you see. But during the genocide, the Israelis used it to put explosive material inside and then to put them in the middle of the neighborhoods. As you see, nothing is standing until about 200 meters. And then after that, the damage starts. But all of these homes were shaken.
Bisan Auda. Over the weekend, as they had agreed to do under the ceasefire terms, Palestinian resistance factions handed over all living Israeli captives to the International Committee of the Red Cross and began locating and preparing to transfer the bodies of dead Israeli captives as well. Israel began releasing living Palestinian hostages from Israeli prisons and detention camps, who returned to Gaza in severe health crises, testifying to unbearable torture, sexual assault, and sadistic humiliation at the hands of Israeli guards. Photojournalist Shadi Abu Sido, who was kidnapped on March 18, 2024, during the Israeli occupation's raid on Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City, spoke about his 20 months of Israeli torture. He says, quote, "For 2 years, I was starved. I went in starving and came out starving. They hung our bodies day and night, naked, abused and insulted us. They told us, 'We killed your children. Gaza is gone.'" Another freed hostage, 28-year-old Mahmoud Abu Ful, said he was brutally beaten and tortured after being abducted from Kamal Adwan Hospital in December 2024. Abu Ful says that Israeli forces beat him so severely in the head during interrogations that he lost his ability to see. During the siege on Kamal Adwan Hospital on December 27, 2024, the Israeli army kidnapped everyone inside, including Abu Ful and, of course, the hospital's director, Dr. Hossam Abu Safiya, who remains in detention despite indications earlier this week that he would be freed under the ceasefire terms. Earlier today, on Thursday, an Israeli court rubber-stamped the extension of Dr. Abu Safiya's arbitrary detention for 6 more months, according to Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights. No charges or evidence have been presented against him, making his detention illegal and politically motivated. Al-Mizan added that, quote, "This decision strips away any pretense. Dr. Abu Safiya is a hostage, a bargaining chip in ongoing negotiations." Over the past few days, Israeli forces also transferred dozens of dead bodies it had been holding to Gaza without any identifying information. Palestinian medical sources said that all 45 of the Palestinian bodies handed over by Israeli forces on Tuesday were blindfolded and handcuffed, indicating that field executions may have taken place. Reporter Adli Abu Taha captured footage of bodies being returned to Gaza on Wednesday. In addition, track marks were found on some of the bodies, suggesting that they may have been run over by Israeli tanks. Israel had complained that not all of the bodies of its dead captives had been handed over on Tuesday, and announced that it had begun a policy of collective punishment by restricting the amount of humanitarian aid it would allow into Gaza and refusing to open the Rafah crossing at the Egyptian border. Palestinian political officials had long emphasized that it would take time and heavy machinery to locate the bodies, since Israel has completely destroyed the areas where bodies had been buried and has still refused to allow in any vehicles to remove the rubble. On Wednesday, the Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of Hamas, issued a statement saying that the group has met its commitments under the plan as it pertains to Israeli captives in Gaza. Quote, the resistance has adhered to what was agreed upon and has handed over all the living prisoners it can and the bodies it can access, the statement read. As for the remaining bodies, they require significant efforts and special equipment to search for and retrieve them, and we are making great efforts to close this file, they said. Israel's attacks on Palestinians have not stopped. On Tuesday, October 14th, Israel killed at least 9 Palestinians, including 5 in the Shujaiya neighborhood of eastern Gaza City. Palestinians were injured by Israeli fire in Jabalia, also in northern Gaza, on Tuesday, according to Gaza Emergency Services. Israeli army attacks in Khan Yunis killed at least 1 Palestinian and injured another. And medical sources stated that 3 Palestinians were killed on Wednesday, including 2 who were killed in another attack on Shujaiya. 4 Palestinians were killed on Thursday, according to the health ministry in Gaza, bringing the total number of people killed by Israel since the ceasefire began to at least 23. Meanwhile, you'll remember that last week we brought you several separate clips showing the 27-year-old journalist Saleh al-Jafarawi celebrating the truce, walking through the streets late at night announcing the ceasefire to residents who didn't receive the news yet, and coming home to his beloved cat. He uploaded this clip on October 9th, surrounded by his colleagues and vowing to continue the coverage even if the genocide continues. On Sunday, October 12th, Saleh was killed, reportedly by armed gangs who have been collaborating with Israel in Gaza City, as he was documenting the first days of the ceasefire and the extent of destruction that Israeli forces left behind. He had been hunted by Israel during the last 2 years of the genocide and had buried many friends and colleagues who were murdered in assassinations by the Israeli army. His brother, Naji, was released from detention in Israel just hours after Saleh was buried by his relatives and loved ones. Naji told reporters that he was tortured and beaten and comforted Saleh's mourning friends, including reporter Ahmed Kahil. Naji tells Ahmed, quote, "You are all our brothers after Saleh. May we be able to fill his shoes for you. Saleh has fulfilled what he has presented."
أنا ذاكر إنه كحيل هيك أنا شكل سبحان الله ذكرني فيه الله يرحمه شو كحيل والله كلكم إخوانه وإنتوا إخواننا بعد صالح وربنا إن شاء الله يعيننا وهيك إن شاء الله نوقف في مكانة صالح عندكم استعينوا بالله وشدوا حيل صالح أفضل إلى ما قدر.
Saleh al-Jafarawi was not only a dedicated journalist, he was also a talented singer. Last year, he sang a song called "Where Are You, O Humanity?" along with his friends and colleagues. It was recorded by journalist and poet Muhammad al-Sha'ir.
أبي يا غزة اسمعي يا علي ما تخضعي إلا لربك تركعي معنا ولا إنسانا.
Exactly 2 years to the day before his murder, Saleh al-Jafarawi, in a viral clip on social media, was filmed comforting an infant in the first week of Israel's genocide on October 12th, 2023. According to the Gaza government media office, Saleh was the 255th reporter and media worker to be killed in Gaza since October 2023. As of Wednesday, the Israeli army was continuing to restrict the amount of humanitarian aid, including food and basic supplies, into Gaza, in another clear violation of the terms of the ceasefire agreement. Al Jazeera's Tariq Abu Azoum said that only a trickle of aid is reaching Gaza, including only 12 World Food Program trucks that entered the central areas. Under the agreement, at least 600 trucks daily are mandated to enter. Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated on Tuesday that, quote, the risk of famine and malnutrition and their devastating consequences remains present in the Gaza Strip despite the entry into force of the ceasefire agreement. The limited quantities of goods and aid allowed into Gaza represent only a fraction of actual needs and fall far short of addressing the severe food and supply deficit that Israel has deliberately imposed as a tool of genocide during 2 years of military assault and comprehensive blockade. The rights group added that its field monitors reported that Israel permitted the entry of only 173 aid trucks since the ceasefire began on October 10th, with limited quantities of fuel and cooking gas, food, supplies, and some medical items. No aid trucks were allowed to enter on Monday under the pretext of releasing Palestinian detainees, nor on Tuesday due to Jewish holidays, both in blatant violation of the ceasefire agreement, Euromed said. Quote, Israel's control over the volume of aid, its non-compliance with the ceasefire terms, and its move toward further reductions not only constitute a breach of the agreement, but also amount to the continuation of genocide by depriving civilians of their basic rights, chief among them food, water, and medicine, and by imposing life-threatening conditions. This ongoing policy demonstrates Israel's determination to use starvation as a central instrument in its strategy to destroy Palestinian society in Gaza. The rights group noted that the entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza, quote, is not a privilege granted by Israel, but a binding legal obligation under international humanitarian law, guaranteeing civilians in wartime an absolute right to receive such assistance, and that, quote, any attempt to link food or medicine to political or security conditions constitutes a flagrant violation of fundamental rights, including the right to life, dignity, personal safety, health, food, and water. Meanwhile, the sites used by the joint U.S.-Israeli private killing fields masquerading as the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation were dismantled this week. Tarek Abu Azoum reported from one of the sites near the Netzarim corridor on October 11th.
Behind me, you can see a barren landscape, which is quite empty at the moment. It used to be the main aid center run by the controversial Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. It's located very close, as you can see, to Netzarim Corridor. And this aid hub has been meant to provide aid services for at least 300,000 Palestinians. We can see now the landscape has quite changed under the current terms of the ceasefire agreement. The foundation itself has dismantled the site here in order to completely deliver the responsibility of delivering aid supplies to the United Nations and its affiliated agencies. And once we were touring here, we found the remnants of the Israeli military munition that used to attack Palestinians who were seeking aid in the site. We can see right now the remnants of sound grenades and few bullets that have been used to shoot people who were trying to reach the site to getting aid. And if you can see there, at the other end, people are still moving throughout Salah al-Din Road. This area was marked as an active red zone, and people were forced to cross long distance on foot in order to get their hands on food supplies, especially during the famine spreading period. The way has been very rocky. It's very complicated to get here, and for many Palestinians, they have described these sites to be completely death traps. And according to initial medical reports, we are talking about over 2,600 Palestinians have been killed near the controversial Gaza Humanitarian Foundation aid centers, and over 19,000 others wounded. This mechanism has been really triggering huge level of criticism among international humanitarian actors, describing it to be very humiliating. And for now, there is a huge shift in the policy of delivering aid supplies, as the United Nations will be responsible in cooperation with the International Committee of the Red Cross to deliver much needed humanitarian supplies during the first phase of the ceasefire deal.
That was Tarek Abu Azoum reporting from central Gaza. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight What I Saw from the Open Hatch of an Aid Plane Over Gaza by an anonymous writer. At 1,000 meters above Gaza, The hatch of a Jordanian aid plane swings open, and I get a glimpse of the blue Mediterranean. The shoreline summons images of 1948, when Palestinian families from Haifa and Jaffa were forced to flee to Gaza to escape Zionist militias who were ethnically cleansing Palestine's coastal villages. The images fade quickly from my mind, and they are replaced by today's shoreline. 77 years on, it is again crowded with displaced families and tents. The view of Gaza itself from above is a shock, a disfigured cityscape where entire neighborhoods have been wiped off the map and others have been reduced to a monotonous gray by Israel's relentless bombardment. Markets barely function, their pale colors set against the rubble, as people walk through ruins or pull carts through broken streets. With every district the plane passes over, the devastation deepens, a relentless panorama of destruction stretching for more than 10 minutes of flight. Weeks earlier, I had been assigned by a news outlet to document these so-called humanitarian operations. I wrestled with the dilemma: should I record a scene I knew to be contrived, or try to show something different? I consulted colleagues, and some urged me to go, suggesting this might be a rare chance to capture what is usually hidden behind the heroic and staged pictures that often emerge from such operations. The trip began at the King Abdullah II Air Base in Zarqa, Jordan, where military aircraft from European countries and, of course, Jordan, are stationed along a lengthy runway. Yet it's the media presence, not the aircraft, that dominates the scene. Dozens of journalists and correspondents compete for interviews and images of the troops as they load aid packages. Every photograph will serve a pivotal purpose: to polish the images of the states involved in the airdrops and to legitimize the aid operation itself. As the plane prepared for takeoff, a question troubled me. How will we prove 30 years from now, in the pages of history, that these images were never about aid? The very states that now posture in sympathy to Palestinians, appearing to send relief, are the same ones that have armed Israel politically and militarily. They have granted Israel cover to wage a war of annihilation on Gaza. Today's airdrops are attempts to cleanse blood-stained hands, yet they ignore calls from Palestinians in Gaza themselves to end this theater. As the photographers and journalists boarded the plane, we were instructed by military personnel not to film Gaza or its devastation. On the flight I joined, filming was restricted to the boxes of supplies and the soldiers. On board, the handful of journalists were monitored by military media officers who combed through images to ensure lenses did not point toward Gaza's annihilation, but remained fixed on the spectacle of aid. Once again, the Palestinian voice was erased mid-flight. And of course, most journalists and outlets don't care. So long as the footage is exclusive and can be sold, nothing else matters. The aid drop journey took nearly 2 hours round trip. Once the aircraft door was shut, with all the packages dropped onto Gaza, the atmosphere inside grew quiet and cameras stopped recording. Through the window, the coastline came back into view. The soldiers began to look like actors on a break between takes, stretched out on the floor, waiting for the plane to return to the military airport. If the ceasefire holds, airdrops may become outmoded as a form of whitewashing for governments complicit in the genocide. But those same countries will still pose as Gaza's saviors, promising aid that will come with many colonial strings attached. Back in Amman, as I headed back into the city, I saw the banners for the Jordan International Food Festival, hosted by the Jordanian government, while Gaza starves. Those are excerpts from what I saw from the open hatch of an aid plane over Gaza by an anonymous writer on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza and around the world. In Gaza, a freed Palestinian hostage is carried on the shoulders of his community, still in Israeli prison garb, but singing and dancing. This clip was filmed by reporter Rami Salim.
Ya habab, 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 ya
And finally, music teacher Ahmad Mouin Abu Amsha and his colleagues performed a song by the legendary Lebanese artist Marcel Khalifa called The Child and the Plane. He said this performance of the song was inspired by Manal Awad, the director of the Edward Said National Conservatory of Music's Gaza branch. The song, Abu Amsha writes, is about a little boy who searches for strings to fly his kite, a symbol of joy, innocence, and freedom. But the sky betrayed his dream. The plane he saw was larger than life and heavier than his tiny heart. It came not with peace, but with destruction. We sing The Child and the Plane by Marcel Khalifa with the displaced children in Gaza's camps to remind the world that childhood deserves peace.
1, 2, 3, 4.
And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.